Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
This is Dr. Daniels, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Network Blake Radio Station. Okay, and by the way, it is Tuesday, August 19th, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and I'm broadcasting from Panama, and you may notice that I have improved reception. I have relocated so that I no longer have screaming children, barking dogs, or crowing roosters. I also have bandwidth, which is triple the usual. So major improvement. So I'm very happy to bring you this show, which is much better quality. So today's topic is Ebola and other things that go bump in the night. What I want to do is trace the medical understanding and the scientific basis for infectious disease. I'm not going to question it. That would be a whole other show. I'm simply going to share that with you. And then we're going to talk about Ebola and how we diagnose Ebola and how we know that someone has or does not have Ebola. Then in that context, we're going to take a look at the response in the United States, the response in Africa, and then I'm going to go over, I'm telling you, the flood of publicity and emails I've been receiving, and we're going to put those in context so that you don't have to worry or fuss or have any confusion surrounding this whole question. Okay, so as you guys know, I frequently go back to where it all started, medical school. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to go back to medical school. And we got to medical school. I got to medical school. They said, there's infectious disease out there, and these diseases could get us all. You doctors are a thin, not blue line, but a thin white line, white coat, that stand between your patients, more or less, our society, and total destruction by these infectious organisms. So I was, 22 years old. That's pretty credulous. I believe anything. Sounded good to me. And they said, but we can't just run around declaring epidemics. There are standards, and we have Koch's postulates. Okay, so I'm going to share with you what Koch's postulates are. Now, Koch's postulates are the basis for deciding that a disease is caused by infection, by an objective organism. And this allowed our society to put disease on a scientific footing. So instead of pointing at someone and saying, oh, he's got cooties, go get him, kill him before he infects all of us, or other types of hysterical, superstitious, and unscientific behavior, we have Koch's postulates. So what are Koch's postulates? This is what they told us in medical schools back in 1980. Entered medical school in 79. In 1980, they thought I could handle conscious postulates. Okay. So first, the microorganism must be found in abundance in all organisms suffering from the disease, but should not be found in healthy organisms. Two, the microorganism must be isolated from a diseased organism and grown in pure culture. It means you have to be able to take this thing and grow it in a culture all by itself. This is actually not that difficult a thing because most of these microorganisms like human blood. Yes. So you just get some human blood. A lot of folks are donating, so it's easy to come by. You put it in something called an auger. It's a really flat plastic disc. And a little gelatin to make it kind of gel. And you put some what you believe to be infected serum, pus, mucus, whatever, from the patient or the infected individual. And the organism causing the disease should grow. Now, the important thing about this is the only way an organism can grow is by multiplying and having babies. And so an organism must be able to multiply and reproduce itself in order to cause an infection, because that's what an infection is. Your organism grows in number. Okay. And the third postulate, the cultured microorganism should cause disease when introduced into a healthy organism. And number four, the microorganism must be re-isolated from the inoculated person. So you have a sick person, you take a sample of their sputum, their semen, their urine, their blood, whatever serum is designated, okay, that serum is then spread in a culture medium, and the organism that you believe is infecting this person must grow out of that. Then you take a sample of that organism, you infect another individual, and those of you who don't want to infect people, you can infect animals or whatever, and then it must grow and infect that organism, and then you must be able to isolate it from the second organism, okay? That's conscious postulate. And so the microorganism must be re-isolated from the inoculated disease experimental host and identified as being identical to the original specific causative agent. These are conscious postulates. Now, we were told all this in medical school, and we were told that we didn't need to worry about all of conscious postulates because scientists had done the experiments for us. And so all we needed to do was identify the microorganism or identify the infected individual by their symptoms, get a sample of their blood, sputum, or whatever, grow that in culture, and isolate the organism. That much we had to do. All the rest had pretty much been done for us. And so infectious disease, then, is defined. This is a definition, not mine. I confess I did go and get this from an online dictionary, but you can find it anywhere. It's a broad definition. It's common. It's a disease that's caused by the invasion of a host by agents whose activities harm the host tissues. In other words, they cause disease. No disease caused by the agent, then the agent can't be caused by disease, all right? So, and this agent can be transmitted to other individuals. That's what it means by infection. Okay, so disease results only if and when a consequence of the invasion and growth. So it's got to invade and it's got to grow. Of a pathogen, tissue function is impaired. So it has to somehow impair some part of the body. Maybe the lungs, you can't breathe. In case of Ebola, blood vessels break and hemorrhage, you bleed all over the place. Okay, great. So This is it. This is the gold standard. This is the holy grail. If you can't isolate the organism, and if the organism once isolated can't reproduce and have babies, and if those babies can't reinfect another organism, then you don't have a disease-causing organism. Okay, you with me? All right, let's keep going here. Now, let's take a look at strep throat. I want to make sure you guys understand, so I'm going to give you some examples. So strep throat is an excellent example, and for this I went to the Mayo Clinic website. I like the Mayo Clinic. Great guy, do a lot of research, and I like the way they really get their facts straight. So what does the Mayo Clinic have to say about this? Mayo Clinic says about sore throat. The doctors usually diagnose the cause of a sore throat on the basis of a physical exam and lab test. So first you examine the patient. The doctor looks for signs and symptoms of strep throat like a fever, enlarged lymph nodes, and will probably use a tongue depressor to get a good look at the throat and tonsils, and then he'll check for redness and swelling and white streaks or pus on the tonsils. Okay. And then he'll take a swab and get a sample of that infectious stuff. And although these signs indicate the exam, an infection appearance alone does not indicate whether it's viral or bacterial. So for that reason, your doctor may use one of the following tests to check for the presence of bacteria, including strep. So he's going to use a throat culture. He's going to take a sterile swab, rub it over the back of the throat, get a sample, and it doesn't hurt. That's what Mayo Clinic says. It doesn't hurt. Mayo bag. The sample is then cultured in the laboratory for the presence of bacteria. The result can take as long as 2 days. All right, sounds good. Sounds good. But what else could your doctor do? He could use a rapid antigen test. This is a quick test. It does not isolate the virus. It does not see if the virus can reproduce. But it's a quick way to tell if the virus is there. Notice it's antigen, not antibody, antigen. Okay, so antigen means this is a protein fragment that the infectious organism has, and that protein fragment is sufficiently unique that when it's present, one can guess that the infectious agent is also present. Unlike the culture, it does not demonstrate that the agent is able to reproduce and able to cause infection. So the rapid antigen test is less informative and much less accurate, but it is used to save time. So then, the culture is our gold standard. Let's take a look at herpes. Herpes is another test. So herpes is a virus, and Ebola is a virus, so this is the similarity. So how do you know somebody has herpes? Well, you could use a zinc test, but, and again, this is the National Library of Medicine, National Institutes of Health, and .gov site. This is what they say. But the zinc test is not as accurate. So, if a person's infected, they say a simple viral culture should show evidence of it. This is not Koch. Koch says, you know, person's got to be sick. You got to isolate this thing. The thing's got to grow in culture. You got to have lots of babies. Then you got to re-isolate it, infect another organism. That organism's got to get sick. So it's a lot of stuff here that Koch is demanding. But all we're saying for herpes is you got to find a little pustule, scrape off the top, swab the base, do a herpes culture, and the culture will come back detecting live virus if the person is infected with herpes. Okay. So this is very, very important. And also to understand the infectious cycle, that's also critical to identify accessible targets for control strategies. And very interesting is once you decide that there is an infection, let's say a large number of people infected, then what should be done? What should be done? This is a .gov website that tells you what should be done. It's www.ncbi.nlm.nih.gov/books/NBK20370/. And I said, well, you could vaccinate. And a vaccine is a killed or weakened attenuated strain of a particular pathogen that's disease-causing organism, or a solution containing critical antigens from the pathogen. The body's immune system will respond to these vaccines as if they contain the actual pathogen, even though the vaccine is not capable of causing the disease. Okay, this is a .gov website. Some people may disagree with this. And so as a result of the immune response, memory lymphocytes will be present, and they respond rapidly when the actual pathogen is encountered. Okay, and currently new types of vaccines, the DNA vaccines, are in early stage. These vaccines contain genes that encode proteins from pathogens, and when these genes are inserted into host cells and are expressed in the form of pathogen proteins, an immune reaction may result. Okay, so now they're going to genetically modify the person with the vaccine. So they inject you with the DNA vaccine. The DNA vaccine enters your DNA. It gets copied and copied and copied, producing proteins and creating immunity. That's the next level of vaccine. Interesting. Now, the ultimate, okay, listen very carefully. The ultimate effectiveness of vaccination, eradication of the infectious agent, has been achieved only for smallpox. I'll repeat that. The ultimate effectiveness of vaccination, eradication of the infectious agent, has been achieved only for smallpox. What this means then, if you want to put this in like really English that a three-year-old can understand, is all other vaccines have been ineffective. Yes, they've been ineffective. And they go on to giving excuses as to why a vaccine may or may not be effective. Well, we don't care. All we want is results. So then, what else can you do to prevent disease? This is again, .gov talking, not me, .gov. So developed countries, that would be the United States, have regulations that help protect the general public from infectious disease. Public health measures typically involving eliminating the pathogen from its reservoir or from its route of transmission. Those measures include ensuring a safe water supply, effectively managing sewage treatment and disposal, and initiating food safety, animal control programs. Duh. Interesting. Very interesting. And, of course, vaccination programs. But the interesting thing about this is nowhere is it mentioned the use of pills or drugs or anything. It's just a possible vaccination program here, and every vaccine except smallpox has been deemed ineffective, according to, again, .gov website, not me, it's them. So very, very interesting. So what's the United States doing about this? What are they doing about this? I think that it's worth noting what the United States is doing about this and how they're doing it. All right. I had this article here that where the president makes a statement. And this one is MSM. And what the president has said is that he's going to check for Ebola, check every last pertinent individual. And what he's going to do is check the Ebola virus. Now, he gives away the whole game here, and I just want to quote him exactly, because once you quote him, then you can, you know, you can see what's going on here. And so what he says is, even though there's an infinitesimal chance of anyone in the United States being affected by Ebola, he is going to start testing and start programs. And in order to understand this, what he's talking about, you have to understand what infinitesimal means. Infinitesimal is, now I had to go look that up in the dictionary just to make sure that I had it right. This is also, by the way, one of my mother's favorite words when she was trying to explain to us as children how we were being totally unrealistic about something because the chances of anything happening were infinitesimal. So this is what they say. Infinitesimal is such an extreme description of a microscopic something that the word is used as an exaggeration more often than to describe something actually quite small. The chances of Roxy going on a date with Norbert were infinitesimal. Blah, blah, blah. So infinitesimal has its root infinite, which usually conjures up thoughts of immeasurably large quantities or sizes. In this case, infinitesimal means something that's immeasurably small, something that cannot be tested. This is very important. Something so small, it cannot be tested or detected. And so the President of the United States has decided that he is going to okay the use of a untested drug on all these people, even though the chances of anyone having anything is infinitesimal. Okay. So in Washington, meanwhile, U.S. President Barack Obama said appropriate precautions are being taken ahead of the arrival of the U.S. Capitol next week of 50 leaders from Africa for a three-day summit. Folks who are from those countries that even have a marginal risk or an infinitesimal risk of having been exposed in some fashion, we're making sure we're doing screening. Okay. We're going to come back to that in a minute as to what their screening is. But first, I want to talk about what screening is being done in the United States and how do we know that somebody in the United States is infected with Ebola. So in order for me to do this, I had to check my doctor website. Well, what are they telling doctors? What tests should doctors do? Okay, so here's a test that doctors should do. Let's go down the list. This is from www.nlm.nih.gov/medlineplus/ENCY/article/001339.htm. Now, you might not be admitted to this site because it's for doctors only, but that is the URL. So this is what doctors are being told to do. Doctors need to do a CBC. That's a complete blood count. It counts white cells and red cells and platelets. It does not count Ebola. And you have electrolyte tests. This measures sodium, potassium, chloride, glucose. It does not measure Ebola. Tests of how well the blood clots. This would be a PT, PTT, or bleeding time. Again, does not measure Ebola. Liver function tests. This measures chemicals that are released when liver cells are destroyed and break open. Again, does not measure Ebola. And the next test to do is to show whether someone has been exposed to the Ebola virus and check for virus-specific antibodies. Well, wait a minute. Problem over here. They're asking doctors in the United States to diagnose Ebola without ever isolating or establishing the presence of the Ebola virus. Yeah. So it doesn't get isolated. There's no proof it was there. It doesn't get cultured. It doesn't reproduce. So there's no proof it's alive or capable of even causing an infection. And they're not even doing an antigen test. So there's not even a detection of a fragment of a protein that could be mistaken for Ebola. So let's do an analogy here. As you know, I write comic strips. This is so far out that we need a comic strip. Only a comic strip can explain this concisely so everyone listening can understand. The two guys are talking. The one guy's just having a bad day. He says, man, I feel like an Ebola virus. I get blamed even if I wasn't ever there. That is the essence of what's going on here. So if you are in the United States, you can be diagnosed with the Ebola virus, you can be quarantined, you can be subjected to medications of who knows what type and variety without the virus ever being isolated, without its presence ever being established. This is important. Very important. So you say, Dr. Daniels, come on, class. What about those health workers who died? Okay, all right. I confess an explanation is needed there, but I have that answer. How do I know this? Because I was a healthcare worker. I was a doctor for 10 years. And one day, a patient of mine was in the hospital. And in their wisdom, they decided the patient needed to be isolated. I said, oh, okay, no problem. You know. I put on gloves, a mask, and gown. No big deal. He said, oh, no, doctor. No, doctor. This is really isolation. We have improved our standards. You have to wear this respirator mask. And that's the one that makes you look like an oversized insect. It's got the round circles on it, you know, the one circle in the center and the two on the side. And you put this, strap this thing on, it makes a hermetically sealed union with your face. Well, I have to tell you, I was a young lady. I was 30-something. And I was pretty darn strong. I mean, I'm not a weakling now, but I was really strong back then. And I had no illness, I was perfectly healthy, took no medication. When I strapped this thing on, man, and I tried to take a breath, not much air came in. It took about 5 minutes, man. I was on the ropes. It was getting critical, I tell you. I had to hurry up. Well, first of all, I had to take this thing off for a minute, get some air, put it on, and I can tell you that was a pretty brief patient visit. But if you are asking healthcare workers to wear a respirator like that, like the one seen in the photographs, if you see all these photographs of healthcare workers in Africa, that healthcare worker is going to die or come close to it if they are forced to wear that respirator for an extended period of time, to say nothing of putting on the gowns and booties and all other stuff in a situation where you have tropical-type conditions. They would pass out just from the fluid loss due to perspiration combined with the lack of oxygen due to that particular mask. Now, just to give you an idea of how dangerous those masks are to the healthcare workers, I got back to my office, and there was this notice from the hospital. We send us notices all the time. Dear doctor, your local hospital is upgrading its infection control. This means we're using the XYZ respirator mask for patients in isolation. It's important for you to report to XYZ place so we can do a test on your respiratory capacity to make sure it is safe for you to use this mask. I kid you not. I kid you not. In other words, they knew that these masks were life-threatening, dangerous, and harmful. And in order to cover their tushes, they had to have each healthcare worker submit to a test, which determined that their ability to suck in air was so strong that they could survive the use of these masks for a particular period of time. Oh. When I got that piece of literature, I made up my mind that I just wasn't going to do it. I was not going to put my life in danger over nothing. Because, of course, the diseases that these patients had for which they were being isolated were things like a resistant bacterial infection, which is spread how? By a doctor touching the wound, you know, or licking the wound or something like that. Well, I wasn't licking anybody's wound, and I was wearing gloves. And so the whole mask thing really wasn't necessary at all. But this is the drama that was going on in the hospital. And so healthcare workers, absolutely. Healthcare workers taking care of a patient who's in isolation, a healthcare worker who's asked to wear these dangerous, hazardous respirators and put on a hazmat outfit. I would tell you, I was working in Syracuse, New York, where it's very, very cold. And so, of course, the hazmat suit was quite welcome because it kept me warm and pretty comfortable, actually. But, you know, in the United States, you have the doctor wearing his street clothes, white coat over that, and the yellow hazmat outfit over that. And if the doctor is in, you know, southern parts, say the Gulf area or Florida, then that's a pretty dangerous situation. And you have a situation in Africa, and they tell you that these dedicated workers were working 3 and 4 hours at a time. Well, that's enough to put anyone in a 6-foot by 3-foot hole, 9-foot deep. That'll knock you out. It's very dangerous. Unsafe work conditions is what it is. Now, one picture, this picture I'm seeing here, the workers are wearing the surgical masks, which are just like, it just keeps you from spitting on the patient and dropping stuff. But other pictures have shown the real hazmat respirators, which are absolutely a hazard, a total hazard to anyone using them. Now, so the solution to the Ebola situation is for our president of the United States to meet with 50 leaders in Africa. What he's going to say, I don't know. And if you look at the Ebola map in Africa, it's interesting because it's a salt and pepper thing. You don't have a bunch of confluent areas. In other words, it just really hasn't taken off. I would just like to say, in Ebola, there's actually no point to early diagnosis because it's not curable. There's no cure. And it's not easily spread. And it's been about to kill us all since 1976. I went to medical school in 1979 to 83. Ebola, the flesh-eating bacteria, was mentioned back then. And, you know, it just really couldn't get any traction because there were no cases. So we couldn't even see a case of what an Ebola-infected individual looked like. And so it's tough to, you know, really train on that when there's no tests to look at, no cases to look at. Okay, so the World Health Organization says, this is the Africa situation, the outbreak is moving fast, and on Friday, the head of the World Health Organization said the Ebola outbreak in West Africa is out of control, but can be stopped. The outbreak is moving faster than our efforts to control it. If the situation continues to deteriorate, the consequences can be catastrophic in terms of lost lives, but also serve severe socioeconomic destruction and a high risk of spread to other countries. Now, the socioeconomic destruction is because they're closing borders, which means you can't have trade, and people who are rich can't make money. So this is very serious. Experience shows that the outbreak could be stopped and the general public was not at high risk of infection, but it would be extremely unwise to let the virus circulate widely over a long period of time. Constant mutation and adaptation are the survival mechanisms of viruses and other microbes. We must not give this virus opportunity to deliver more surprises. Now, again, this virus has been around since 1976. People in Africa have been dying of it. And it's now 2014. So it's been, you know, close to 40 years now, and this virus just really hasn't done much. And so World Health Organization officials will hold an emergency meeting next week in Geneva looking at whether the outbreak constitutes a public health emergency of international concern. And the agency said that if the meeting does reach that decision, it would recommend appropriate temporary measures to reduce international spread. They didn't elaborate on what that might be. And new vaccine to be tested on humans, the U.S. National Institute of Health plans in mid-September, thank God we got a few weeks, to begin testing an experimental Ebola vaccine on people after seeing encouraging results in preclinical trials on monkeys. In its final stages, Ebola causes external and internal bleeding, vomiting, and diarrhea. 60% of people infected in the current outbreak are dying from the illness. And so there's an experimental drug, doctors hope will improve this person's health. So one of these two health workers evacuated the United States. And they're working on it. And again, even though the risk is infinitesimal, the president is going to make sure that he's going to start screening people with what I don't know. Because the test we have is what? It's an antibody test, does not detect the virus. And if you submit to an Ebola antibody test, you may be positive, but the positive antibody test does not indicate that you are infected. And the plan is to use this antibody test as indication that a person is infected, even though antibody tests, by definition, cannot detect infection. So let's take a look at the emails I've been getting. These have been really phenomenal. Okay, this is my favorite one. If you promote a cure for Ebola, men with guns will show up at your door. Okay. So Ebola is a disease that doctors are diagnosing without even testing for the virus, okay? So it's an imaginary disease. The doctor does a test. Test says yes. The doctor believes you have the disease. You believe you have the disease. And we just go from there. So there is no evidence of this disease. There is no test for this disease that would even begin to fulfill the scientific definition of infection. In other words, the scientific definition of infection is you must identify and isolate the infecting agent. So the present methods being used in the United States to diagnose Ebola do not isolate the virus. So if you subject yourself to an Ebola test, it may indicate positive, but positive something. It does not indicate that you're infected because it is an antibody test, which means it only detects fragments of proteins that it thinks does not like Ebola. That's like we have a kid named Johnny. Johnny's supposed to go to work on Monday. He didn't show up on Monday. On Monday, there was an equipment failure. And someone said, we're going to investigate this equipment failure. And we think Johnny did it. And so we're going to find some people who don't like Johnny. They're called anti-Johnnies. And if we can find some anti-Johnnies, then we know that Johnny must have been here. And therefore, Johnny must have been responsible for the equipment failure. This is what using an antibody test as a diagnosis, it's an exact analogy. So if you think somebody did something, committed a crime, you go find a bunch of folks who don't like them. You say, well, these people don't like Sally. They must have known Sally. Well, if they knew Sally, Sally must have been over there where they are. In fact, she might be there now. And if something bad happened over there, well, we're sure Sally did it because we found these bodies, anti-Sallys, they don't like Sally. Yes, yes, yes. It sounds like a witch hunt to me. Where you have an infection or a disease which is going to spread to everyone else, which is kind of like evil, and we don't have any objective evidence of the disease causing agent. So we do not isolate the Ebola virus. So here we have it. This is an email. If you promote a cure for Ebola, men with guns will show up at your door. Okay, so this person is Michael Snyder, activist post. If I had a cure for Ebola, I could never sell it to you. I don't have a cure for Ebola, of course, but even if I did, I could never promote it. And if you have a cure for Ebola and you start promoting it on the Internet, men with guns could soon show up at your door. Okay, so this is a very long email, so I'm going to cut to the chase here. What has happened is the government has chosen to create an economic opportunity for a new vaccine. And so what they've done is they've created an apparition that would be a ghost, a concept in people's minds. And this idea is the infection, right? This concept of Ebola, this concept that you could catch Ebola, that is the infection. And so then the government wants to present you with an expensive, and I'm sure debilitating, vaccine for this infection. And what the government is saying, we don't want anyone else honing in on our game. We created this scam, we created this imaginary disease, and we are going to decide who profits from it. And if you ain't on the inside, you don't get the profit from it, and that's all there is to it. And so this person says, unfortunately, I'm not kidding. Even if you made a discovery that could potentially save millions of lives, that will not earn you an ounce of mercy from the FDA. The association here is that if you have a cure for Ebola, you're going to save lives. But the only person that can save you from Ebola is you, and that's by not believing the hype. It's like voodoo. A person practicing voodoo can harm you, but only if you believe in the voodoo, only if you believe in the harm. Okay, so what we have here is a high-end voodoo game, and you got to decide if you're going to enter the game and at what level. And so you might want to enter the game as a voodoo victim and play this whole Ebola thing out and wonder if you're going to get it and go get the vaccine, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, so if you're going to believe, and everyone gets to believe what they want to, and that's okay. It's okay. No problem. But you have the voodoo priestess, and the voodoo priestess, which is the government, okay, says, I am captivating my audience, and I am cultivating in my audience a special Ebola sensitivity to my voodoo spell. And no, you may not horn in on my Ebola game. That's what's going on here. And so anyone who tells you they can cure Ebola is basically honing in on the government's scam. You think, hey, I'm going to offer a natural cure for Ebola. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to offer a natural cure, and I'm going to sell it. And I'm going to make a little bit of profit here off my natural cure, which is not nearly as harmful as the vaccine. And the government says, no. I'm sorry. You don't get to play in my pond in my game. I'm doing this mind game here, this psyop, and you may not cash in. And I personally think that's a reasonable position to take. I think if you're going to create the psyop, you know, what the heck? I mean, it's like someone trying to hone in your personal dream, you know. You know, it's your fantasy. So the government's got this Ebola fantasy, and it's telling the natural healers, or anyone else for that matter, that they can't hone in or cash in on this situation. Okay. In fact, the FDA has just issued a statement that contains a chilling warning for anyone that is claiming they know how to prevent or cure Ebola, which is true, because the only way to prevent or cure Ebola is to break the voodoo spell, is to get the public to not believe. And so anyone who claims that they can sell something that's going to cure Ebola is essentially honing in on the government's, you know, gambling game. And without a doubt, FDA bureaucrats are scouring the internet right now for any sign of an Ebola cure or treatment. And when they find one, by golly, they are likely to crack down very hard based on their history. And again, they have created, manufactured this thing. The Ebola is real. It does exist. But that Ebola can cause widespread disease for which a vaccine is necessary. There is the fantasy. So if you do have a cure for Ebola, you might want to be very, very careful. Okay, so if you have a cure for Ebola, then you're just basically as fraudulent as the government. You're basically saying, hey, I want a piece of the fraud. And so what this guy is saying, you should be very, very careful. I agree with him. You know, if someone else is committing a fraud, man, you don't hone in on their game. You just say, hey, you know what? It's a fraud. I'm going to leave it alone. I'm not going to get involved. So if you do have a cure for Ebola, you might want to be very, very careful. You could end up having men with automatic weapons conducting a military-style raid on your home when you least expect it. I wish that things were not this way in America. I wish that this nation was not being transformed into a Big Brother police state. And again, it's all in the mind of the so-called victim, or all in the mind of the mark. And each one of you listening tonight is a potential mark, in other words, the person being hustled. And so you get to decide if you want to be hustled and how far down the road you want to hustle. I wish that we could feel free to share information with one another about the fear of men with guns coming to our homes. But the cold, hard reality of the matter is that this 2014, we live in a time when our government is being run by paranoid control freaks. Oh, my God. So I say, you know, I'm not selling a cure for Ebola. If I was going to sell a cure for Ebola, what would it be? It would be a glass of purified water, probably 1 cc. And, you know, you could charge you $100 for it. A person could take one drop, only one drop, two drops is too powerful. One drop only, and they could drop it maybe on, drop it on their head. That'd be right. Yeah, drop it on their head. One drop a day, one drop only. And that would be the cure. But it doesn't matter what the cure is. The cure could be anything. In this case, it's supposedly NanoSilver. It's a company offering NanoSilver as a cure for Ebola. And the FDA, it looks like maybe sent them a note or something. Okay. So that's one email I got on the Ebola thing. Okay. Advanced Bionutritionals. Okay. The Ebola virus can be destroyed naturally despite what you've been told. Okay. In the August 19th Nutrient Insider, I showed you a couple of ways to fight off deadly viral infections like Ebola. One of those treatments is doctor-administered oxidative therapies. Okay, so now you got to go to a doctor, pay money, get oxidative therapies. You see this is leading. Well, one oxidative therapy in particular uses a nutrient to produce these amazing results. And it's an easy and inexpensive treatment the people of Africa need today. Today, right now, right here. Now. The oxidative treatment is a high-dose intravenous vitamin C. This may not sound like an oxygen treatment, but high-dose intravenous vitamin C works on the cellular level, much like other oxidation therapies. And, you know, But should Ebola break out in the U.S., and should you contract it, two highly unlikely events, okay, they're telling you it's highly unlikely, make sure you have a doctor who can administer high-dose IV vitamin C. It could save your life. You're insider for better health. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, so you guys are getting the gist of this, I hope. Let me take a couple of questions because we're running out of time here in case anybody has any. Okay, no questions. If anyone has any questions, you can just click on the appropriate tab here. Let me check the chat room. Doctor, do you think you were ever infected with disease by any of your patients? Absolutely not. Never, ever. Not even close. And let me tell you, I didn't wear a mask, and my patients coughed, and they had eye lance boils, pus went all over the place. Never, ever, not even once. Okay. All right. Okay. So we've got a bunch of wise comments here in the chat room, but that's why we have a chat room. Okay. So I want to tell you about more about the African Ebola. This is a serious eye-opener. I'm telling you, nothing like getting the facts. And this is what the World Health Organization has to say about this. And so I'm going to accept the World Health Organization position as definitive. In other words, I'm not going to question it. I'm going with the flow. If World Health Organization says it's true, by golly, it is, and I'm going to believe it. I'm busy. I don't have time to second-guess people and accuse them of things. All right. So the World Health Organization says, the Ebola disease, EBD, formerly known as Ebola hemorrhagic fever, is a severe, often fatal illness in humans. Outbreaks have a case fatality rate of 90%, and these occur in villages in Central and West Africa near tropical rainforests. Okay, hey, I got my attention, right? I'm living in a tropical rainforest. I'm right next to the forest, as a matter of fact, about 50 feet away. In fact, it's not the forest, it's a jungle. Okay. So the virus is transmitted to people from wild animals and spreads in the human population through human-to-human transmission. And this fruit bats of the blah, blah, blah family are considered to be the natural host of the Ebola virus. Now, I happen to look up fruit bats, and fruit bats often happen to be a delicacy in the diet of Africans. They eat them dried and in a special stew. Very, very tasty, I understand. Severely ill patients require intensive supportive care. There is no treatment or vaccine available for use in people or animals. Okay, so this disease is untreatable, incurable, which means there's no reason for early diagnosis. And it can only be spread by touching the organs of infected humans. Excuse me, that's an autopsy. So if you're doing autopsies, you are at risk for catching Ebola from the people you're doing autopsies on. All right, I get it. But you cannot catch it by holding hands. You cannot catch it by someone coughing on you. You cannot catch it by air. What does that mean? That means the use of respirators is a piece of drama and theater to capture your imagination. It has no effect in stemming or reducing disease spread. Okay, Ebola first appeared in 1976 in two simultaneous outbreaks. What does that tell you? One outbreak, okay, gotcha. Two simultaneous outbreaks? Not in active nature. Something else is going on. Okay. And the Democratic Republic of Congo, Sudan, later was a blah, blah, blah. Okay. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 strains of Ebola virus. But get this. Transmission. This is where it gets really interesting. Ebola is introduced into the human population through close contact with the blood, secretions, organs, and other bodily fluids of infected animals. What kind of animal? In Africa, infection has been documented through the handling of infected chimpanzees, gorillas, fruit bats, monkeys, forest antelope, and porcupines found ill or dead in the rainforest. In other words, somebody eats roadkill, right? People in the United States eat roadkill. Now, more to the point, they've just described the basic diet of Africans. And so they're telling Africans, if you believe this, you're going to believe this Ebola thing. You've got to forsake your natural diet and go on canned food, preserved food that you're going to import from around the world, right? You've got to all of a sudden get on that treadmill of giving up control over your food supply to the international purveyors of contaminated food. Okay, so got that. Now, Ebola spreads in the community through humans-to-human transmission, direct contact through broken skin or mucous membrane. This is not easy to catch, guys. You got to get a knife, cut the person open, and suck their blood. Then, and only then, you might get Ebola. In fact, better yet, don't suck their blood because then it's exposed to your enzymes and your Ebola might get, you know, denatured. You've got to cut your skin, get some blood, cut their skin, get some blood. Rub the two together, become blood brothers. This is what it takes to catch Ebola. Minimum. Or, like I said, do autopsies on infected people. Now, healthcare workers have frequently been infected while treating patients with suspected or confirmed EV. Whoa, back up. How can a healthcare worker get infected while treating a patient with suspected Ebola who doesn't have Ebola? Okay, so given a healthcare worker dressed up in hazmat now, he's got this respirator on, he can barely breathe, he's gasping for air himself, he's got on this extra hazmat jacket, he's exuding sweat through every pore, becoming dehydrated, getting electrolyte imbalances, and boom, plop, hits the ground dead. And that's exactly what happened. This is an occupational disease by asking these healthcare workers to put on all this hazmat crap. And if this is an infectious disease, and science, it's the infectious agent carrying the disease. The infectious agent has to be transferred from one person to the second person, or else the second person gets sick. So how can a healthcare worker caring for someone who does not have Ebola drop dead of Ebola? Well, of course they drop dead. They're dead. They did not die of Ebola. And if they did, they certainly didn't get it from the person they're treating. So again, it's a workers' compensation case. It's the workers' comp case, ain't no Ebola case, and they need to change the conditions for health workers in Africa, dispense with the hazmat stuff, because Ebola doesn't spread that way. Okay. Healthcare workers have frequently been infected while treating patients with suspected EV. Now, if you can get infected with Ebola while treating a suspected infection, then that confirms that this is voodoo we're talking about, and it's a matter of belief. It's the belief that kills. Now, if it's the belief that kills, you can easily save your life. Now, among workers in contact with monkeys or pigs infected with this virus, now, over there, they get real. You're hungry, you go out, you catch a monkey, you kill it, you skin it, and you eat it. So none of this go to the store and pick up a package, you know. This is the way people eat. Several infections have been documented in people who are clinically asymptomatic, no symptoms. All right, so if you have an organism in a body, you can detect it. The body is healthy. The disease is caused by something other than the organism if the organism is present in large amounts in healthy people. All right, so we've established this. Now, diagnosis. This is very interesting. Other diseases that should be ruled out. This is important. Listen to this part. We only got 4 minutes left here. Other diseases that should be ruled out before a diagnosis of Ebola can be made are malaria. So these symptoms of Ebola are just like malaria, typhoid fever, shigellosis, cholera, leptospirosis, plague, rickettsiosis, relapsing fever, meningitis, hepatitis, and other viral fevers. That's a long list. But if you're in the United States, they don't test for those diseases first. They just test for everything but Ebola and then decide that you have Ebola. You see where this is going. So Ebola infection can be diagnosed definitively, that means without doubt, in a laboratory through several types of tests. Now, virus isolated by cell culture. This virus can be isolated by cell culture. This method is not being used in the United States. This is not what doctors are being told to do. Vaccine and treatment, there is no licensed vaccine, and there is no treatment. And if there's no vaccine and there is no treatment, you have to make it, you know, you have to wonder why even seek medical attention if they've confessed there's nothing they can do to help you. You know, what can I say? I have a lot of people on here. If anyone has any questions, we have time for one question. All right, we got somebody in the chat room casting spells here. Okay, let's see if we have any. All right, so there's no. All right, so we got a believer in the chat room. The believer in the chat room says if I believe in WHO, then they do too. Okay, so that is it for today. I hope this clarifies all of your Ebola questions. And next week is syphilis, the modern face of syphilis. You might have syphilis. and why your doctor is ignoring it, why he hasn't tested you for it, and which modern-day diseases are actually syphilis in disguise. So we're going to talk about that next week. And please visit vitalitycapsules.com, click on About Me, enter your information in the upper right box, and get your special report, remedies so powerful they could make antibiotics obsolete. Certainly these are the ones I use on my patients, and I never had to write another prescription for antibiotics. So that is today's program. I hope that you guys got a lot out of it and that I've clarified a few mysteries. All right. See you next week.